Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone. Or human beings.
Time when the operation the machine becomes so orient, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the game to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio! All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome to Cabal Empire Exposed with your host, Joaquin Hagopian. On Friday, the 15th of March, already midway through the third month of the year. How time flies. Got two articles written this week, and I'm just gonna jump in. First article entitled, Desperation Looms Over NATO's War in Ukraine. On the two-year anniversary of Russia's launching its special military operation in Ukraine, to denazify and demilitarize Ukraine, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg boldly stated, quote, Ukraine is now nearer to NATO than ever before. We are assisting in improving your armed forces' compatibility with our allies. We are opening a new joint center for analysis, training, and education in Poland together. We're also strengthening our political relationship through the NATO-Ukraine Council, where we consult and make decisions together. Ukraine's enlistment in NATO isn't a problem of if, but rather when. Just two days later, on Monday, February 26th, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, arguing why he is opposed to sending his longer-range Taurus cruise missiles to Ukraine with 310-mile and 500-kilometer range that can reach Moscow. He inadvertently outed Britain and France already having troops on the ground in Ukraine as of last year, for target control launches of UK Storm Shadow and France's Scalp cruise missiles inside Ukraine. Politician Scholz is very aware of the latest German poll showing that 61% of his nation's population oppose sending Taurus missiles to Ukraine, and 80% are against sending NATO troops. So, the guy that just goes wherever way the wind blows, is not for sending his Taurus cruise missiles to Ukraine. Probably no accident that on that same day, on February 26th, French President Emmanuel Macron dropped the bombshell suggesting NATO troops may be necessary to send to Ukraine. Putin responded on Thursday, February 29th, saying that NATO entering Ukraine would risk igniting nuclear World War III. On Friday, March 1st, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin warned that if Ukraine falls, NATO will need to fight Russia. On the very same day, RT reported that Russian spies release a transcript of a previously recorded 38-minute audio clip of top German generals discussing using Taurus missiles inside Ukraine to blow up Kerch Bridge that serves as a critical supply line from mainland Russia to Crimean Peninsula. The German generals discussed using British soldiers already in Ukraine to facilitate Taurus missiles launched. On Wednesday, March 6th, Macron then goads other NATO members to not be cowards, quote, actively recruiting NATO countries like Poland and the Baltic states to join France and Britain sending troops to Ukraine to fight Russians, especially if Moscow breaks through Ukraine's eastern front, which is more than imminent. On Friday, March 8th, Polish Foreign Minister Radoslaw Sikorski emphasized the need to respond to Russia with, quote, asymmetrical warfare, adding, quote, the presence of NATO forces in Ukraine is not unthinkable. On Thursday, March 7th, UK Foreign Minister David Cameron met in Germany with his counterpart, Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock. You're urging Berlin to send Taurus missiles to show strength as the, quote, only pathway to peace. Just 3 days earlier, Baerbock, defying her boss, called on her German government to, quote, intensively consider sending Taurus missiles, and in fact, all materials to help Kiev. Another prominent German politician, Marie Agnes Strack-Zimmermann, who heads Berlin's Parliamentary Defense Committee, is leading the coalition government's opposition against Scholz's refusal, claiming, quote, it only pleases Putin, as she plans to bring the issue to another parliamentary vote this next week. UK's ex-defense minister Ben Wallace, who sent the Storm Shadow missiles last year to Kiev, blasted Scholz, stating, as far as the security of Europe goes, he is the wrong man in the wrong job at the wrong time, unquote. The warring political majority are all counting on the weakling Scholz to once again cave in, like after he initially refused to give Ukraine Leopard tanks, and then reneged only to have most destroyed by Russia. In recent days, based on statements made by a growing number of warmongering European leaders, no doubt following their master City of London orders, the threat of world war breaking out in Europe appears to be increasing on a near daily basis. A pattern has emerged where the two current war fronts in Europe and the Middle East appear to be taking turns, ramping up wider war hostilities. With as soon as one flares up, the other one lulls, and then vice versa. This pattern may well be strategically timed because virtually 100% of today's global population is totally against world war, and thus the criminal deep state cabal may actually be alternating tensions from week to week between these two war fronts. Deep state cabal may actually, oh, I just said that. All the while, each region is creepily moving toward worst-case scenario World War III. It's not worst in most of their cases, though. They're high on the list. If rising conflict came all at once, it would incur extreme oppositional pushback, and they know that from the global masses. Especially in the West, because it's been deliberately set up by the elites to lose on every war front and every war. Western political puppets are merely the globalist useless idiots. Well, useful in some cases, okay, counting on full protection from their masters for suicidally committing treason against their own blood-sacrificed citizens. Meanwhile, the most powerful NATO member, the U.S., has a stalled Congress in a quagmire after the House last month refused to pass the Senate's $60 billion Ukraine package bill, to not including support to bolster U.S. border security. America's impasse over delivering more aid to Kiev is forcing NATO and Europe to step up both its assistance and hawkish rhetoric. On Thursday, March 8, Czech President Petr Pavel declared that 18 NATO countries are sending 800,000 artillery shells to Ukraine, keeping the war going at all costs, since Kiev's acute ammunition shortage has reached critical emergency status. Additionally, Pavel presented a proposal on Saturday, March 9th, for Western allies to send non-combat units directly to Ukraine for training purposes. This provocative intervention follows the more aggressive path led by UK and France, already deploying troops on the ground in Ukraine, assisting Kiev's fire long-range cruise missiles not only at targets in annexed Russian regions, but directly at targets inside Russia as well. In tandem, a growing number of European puppet leaders are incrementally carrying out pressure demands of the central banking money changers that control both globalist entities in Brussels, the EU, as well as NATO. In response to NATO's apparent rush, in response to NATO's apparent rush to fast-track Ukraine into NATO as the next 33rd nation to join on Saturday, March 9th, Republican Utah Senator Mike Lee countered with, quote, "If Ukraine is in NATO, the United States should be out, plain and simple. We must draw a red line with NATO. You can have Ukraine or the United States," unquote. All of this bickering back and forth between pro-war NATO members pushing more aggressively than ever to escalate the hot war with Russia, while minority factions within U.S. NATO oppose the prospect of all-out war, resisting sending more Kiev troops and arms. As the impending Ukraine defeat becomes more glaringly obvious, war fatigue has been growing amongst both the West citizens and a few of their politicians. High-profile dissenters against Brussels' Ukraine war policy as a thorn in the side of the globalists are Slovakia's Prime Minister Robert Fico and Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Plus, after over 2 years and a Ukraine victory now impossible, cracks in the NATO armor are fast spreading. Some leaders are worrying more these days over their own fragile economies, growing internal conflicts or their own political future during a year when a record 65 nations are holding national elections in this world. As a result, today's NATO is anything but united. Contrary to false claims by Stoltenberg and his fellow globalist pro-war cronies, the one government player most responsible for today's gloomy outcome in Ukraine is Putin hater Victoria Nuland, who last week submitted her resignation to bow out, perhaps being picked over for her disastrous failed policy in Ukraine. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky placed all his eggs in two heavily fortified entrenchments in the Donbas cities of Bakhmut and Avdiivka, where the longest, most intense, and costly fighting of this two-plus-year-long war happened. Ukraine's tyrannical puppet's all-or-nothing strategy, failing to listen to his fired top commander, General Zelensky, now conveniently removed to London as Kiev's UK ambassador, will prove his downfall. Though Zelensky lost the opportunity to build up his defensive lines outside of Avdiivka, now his remaining forces are heavily outmanned, outgunned, and lacking critical supplies as the larger Russian army is now rapidly advancing, perhaps all the way to Kiev. The bluster of launching another Ukraine counteroffensive is merely false bravado propaganda geared to entice more Western ammo and weapons being sent to Kiev. But all the latest talk of NATO boots on the ground has to be music to Zelensky's ears, and with NATO's largest joint military exercises ongoing not far away until June 1st, his prayer may yet be answered. Again, the central bank money launderers have also placed all their eggs in their Ukrainian devil's playground war basket. And as the West puppet master's demands never go unheeded, rising desperation calls for desperate measures that dictate all this latest war posturing. Well, that's the end of my article. However, after it was posted online, and it even made it to my old boss's outfit, Global Research, and it's one of the most popular, most read articles of the week. Anyway, and you can find it at my usual thegovernmentrag.com, jameshfetzer.org, and theinteldrop.org. Okay, there have been a lot of developments just since I finished that article and posted it online. So here's the postscript. On Sunday, March 10th, Slovak Defense Minister Robert Kalinak stated the obvious, that sending NATO troops into Ukraine would significantly increase the risk of global conflict, unquote. If nations are, quote, serious about supporting Ukraine, they should call on able-bodied Ukrainians to return home from all the rest of the European countries that they ran away from when the war started. Kalinak takes a pragmatic approach, stating, since this is an apparent war to the last Ukrainian, it's high time the world look for peaceful solutions, adding, only through the immediate cessation of hostilities can we prevent further bloodshed and restore Ukraine's sovereignty. So basically what we have here are two countries out of all the countries in Europe, and there's over 40 of them, two countries are consistently against the war in Ukraine, against the violence, against the bloodshed, and they want it to end. All the rest of them are for war, or at least some of their leaders at least are saying war, 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 and some of them want World War III. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Anyway, Slovakia, the defense minister, just said that. Head of the Slovak parliament, Peter Pellegrini, echoed a similar down-to-earth sentiment while visiting neighboring Hungary, and that's the other country that's been against this war. Quote, we must not give up on trying to end the daily killing of soldiers and civilians as soon as possible. That's his quote. Cooler heads prevail in at least two EU nation members, Slovakia and Hungary. In the first week of March, Hungarian Foreign Minister Peter Szijjártó stated, quote, time is on Russia's side. The later a ceasefire is called and negotiations begin, the worse it will be for Ukraine. We have also made it clear that the longer this war lasts, the closer we get to the terrifying danger called the Third World War." Unquote. From the beginning of this conflict, both Hungary's foreign minister and prime minister, Viktor Orban, have been urging a ceasefire in negotiations, recognizing that sending weapons and support to Ukraine only causes more war and deaths, and is clearly not in the interest of either the warring parties nor the rest of Europe. But out of the 32 NATO countries, only Hungary and Slovakia have consistently not promoted sending weapons, but called for immediate ceasefire. This approach has isolated them from the vast majority of other nations in both NATO and the EU, whose leaders from virtually every other European country have vocally promoted confrontation and war against Russia, following the NATO kingpin, the U.S.'s lead, of course. Pathetically, this amoral, blind obedience to following the dictates of their City of London masters comes at enormously grave cost. Aggressive U.S. foreign interventionism has failed at every turn around the globe. Yet it only continues because the real controlling power behind the U.S. bully has always been the hidden hand of the City of London money changers, dictating the West's demonization toward Putin and Russia with its forever divide and rule crusade. Demanding strict compliance to a policy of nonstop provocation and encirclement against Russia and China over the last 8 decades, since World War II, and in recent years, it's totally backfired. Of course, that's by strategic design as well, throwing the world's two wealthiest continents, U.S. and Europe, under the bus, overrunning them with foreign hostile invaders of disparate cultures, religion, and skin pigment. You'd think in all this time, the Western people would finally wake up and realize their political leaders' suicidal policies dictated by their controllers hasn't worked to their benefit. But now it's too late to reverse tragic consequences of their irreversible ruin, deliberately plotted and executed by satanic elites bent on consolidating absolute power and control by destroying the West. Even the dark side globalist Pope Francis said something that makes some sense this week. I don't think I've ever agreed with this asshole. A Swiss media host asked the Pope his stand on the two arguments, the one calling for the courage of surrender and the white flag, and the other, the contention that surrendering would send the wrong message, legitimizing use of force in the world. The pontiff responded, quote, "I think that the strongest interpretation is the one who sees the situation, who thinks about the people, and has the courage of the white flag, and the one who negotiates. When you see that you are defeated, that things are not going well, you have to have the courage to negotiate. Negotiation is never about surrendering, but the courage of not leading the country to suicide. You may be ashamed, but how many deaths will there be in the end? Negotiate in time. Look for countries to mediate." Hey, I'm not arguing against this guy, and I never agree with this satanic pope. As I say, never have I ever agreed with this papal Satanist, but in this case, he makes a lot of sense. Of course, leave it to NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg to immediately refute the Pope. Quote, "What happens around a negotiating table is inextricably linked to the strength of on the battlefield. It's not the time to talk about surrender by the Ukrainians. That will be a tragedy for the Ukrainians. It will also be dangerous for all of us." Yes, always. "Because he never stops at the Ukraine border. He'll take over all of Europe. Yeah, we've heard it a million times, and they keep saying it over and over and over. Lies, lies, lies. No Western puppet, politically given strict orders for war, will ever promote negotiated peace. Although Italy's defense minister, Guido Crosetto, late last week, in response to France, Poland, and the Baltic states' readiness to enter troops in Ukraine, did refer to diplomacy as the preferred approach. In his words, quote, "France and Poland can speak for themselves, but not on behalf of NATO. Their arguments make no sense. It means taking a step towards one-sided escalation that would block the path to diplomacy," unquote. Another very reasonable, spoken-minded person, the defense minister of Italy. German defense minister Oskar Pistorius countered Emmanuel Macron's sensationalized utterance with this. Quote, "Nobody really wants to have boots on the ground in Ukraine." Well, I wouldn't say nobody, but yeah, there are some people in Europe, like all the people that live in Europe and a few of their leaders, yeah, they don't want boots on the ground in Ukraine. Macron's February 26th inserted bombshell testing the waters was no accident, though. The Rothschild plant Macron, planting the seed for World War III, only did so per the pre-approved order by his City of London superiors as pure psyops. The elites utilized the good cop, bad cop dynamic all the time, initially floating predictive programming before the public, immediately followed within 24 hours by NATO kingpins, the U.S., U.K., and Germany all promptly rejecting Macron's spoken out of turn, volatile, verbal provocation. Yet puppet prime ministers and presidents from France, Poland, and Baltic states like Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia all agreed it remains a viable and likely needed option, they say. The latest to come down on the side of NATO troops in Ukraine is Estonia's prime minister, Kaja Kallas. When on Wednesday, March 13th, she was asked by parliament members to guarantee Estonian soldiers would not be deployed in Ukraine. And her answer was, "I do not make such promises because circumstances may change. According to your interpretation, it seems that interference could be defined as anything. Our military assistance to Ukraine could also be regarded by Russia as interference. We have clearly chosen a side here, and this side is Ukraine, because Russia is a direct threat to us," they all say, scripted straight from the City of London. Yes, the demon Vlad the Bad Putin won't stop at the Ukraine border, but will keep heading west to conquer all of Europe in its fixated megalomaniacal quest to restore the long-lost Soviet Empire. Roar! All the lying minions must spout this centralized globalist script as their forever excuse to plunge humanity off an engineered Armageddon depopulation cliff. It will never stop until billions or perhaps all of humanity are dead in World War III, or from the famine, mass starvation, or the next bioweapon unleashed from biolab test tubes as Pandemic Disease X with its mandated depop jab. Elites locked and loaded WMD arsenal appears limitless. A March 7th supposed expose from the Paris Weekly, Marianne Magazine, speculates that Macron's reactive alarm went off with his NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine once he received three French military intelligence documents painting the dire prognosis for any Ukraine victory. The military assessment cited the West-trained Kiev forces' humiliating failure in its counteroffensive last year, along with Kiev's depleted manpower, weapons, and ammo attrition crisis, and recent loss of fortified Avdiivka, all portending Ukraine's imminent defeat against Russia. The magazine piece offered this explanation for prompting the French president's knee-jerk inflammatory reaction, raising the possibility of sending NATO troops to Ukraine. This article, to me, is an afterthought excuse intended to defuse the centralized City of London agenda for plunging us all into World War III, writing off Macron's provocation as his mere panicking overreaction. I ain't buying it. It's more predictive programming conditioning the global masses for a devastating Third World War on multiple war fronts. That's what it is. When right after UK Foreign Minister David Cameron met with his German counterpart, Annalena Baerbock, last week, pushing for German Taurus missiles launched from Ukraine into Russia, and the German media asked him if London could aid Berlin in, quote, solving the problems, i.e. Scholz's refusal, preventing a Taurus delivery. Cameron replied, quote, we are determined to work closely with our German partners on this issue, as well as on all the other ones to help Ukraine, unquote. So again, war-loving United Kingdom is counting on Vassal Scholz to vacillate yet again toward working with UK boots on the ground in Ukraine, firing the German longer 310-mile range cruise missiles deep into Russia within reach of Moscow, which would then target both UK and Germany for Russia's direct retaliation that Putin stated would risk nuclear confrontation. But that's precisely the globalist endgame objective all along. German Foreign Minister Baerbock needed no arm twisting from Cameron, as she's been chomping at the bit for her Berlin's longer range missiles hitting Russia. Again, their satanic taskmasters wouldn't accept it any other way. So-called leaders of the West and NATO, in actuality, are in total disarray. They know that they are betraying their own citizens as traitors, destroying Western civilization. And for every one of the war hawks, even in the same country, another one will come out saying just the opposite. Again, reflecting total disarray, playing the old good cop versus bad cop routine. The United Kingdom, as the Anglo part of the hated Anglo-American Zionist Empire, wreaking havoc around the globe for the last half millennium, now in its dying death throes, is no longer a viable economic nation, UK. Its standard of living is now in free fall, with starvation and freezing to death in the winter now taking hold, with the rest of Europe and North America not far behind. Recently, UK's ex-prime minister, current foreign minister, coming out big, provoking world war against Russia, David Cameron has been prodding Germany to send its longer-range Taurus missiles that can hit Moscow. But when Vladimir Putin responds with a warning that should NATO members put boots on the ground in Ukraine or use NATO weapons to attack Russia, including its capital and or Crimea, as a direct and clear existential threat to Russia's national defense and sovereignty, Putin warned that Russia would use nukes to defend itself. Now, in response to Putin's latest red line that the West has totally disregarded, UK's current defense minister, Grant Shapps, on Wednesday, March 13th, urged Putin to stop, quote, saber-rattling. Then, a day later, on Thursday, he made the claim, quote, there is no threat to the Russian state. The threat is, I'm afraid, to Ukraine and countries like Poland. unquote. On March 7th, Lithuanian Defense Minister Arvydas Anušauskas confirmed that NATO will soon deploy the U.S. Patriot surface-to-air missile systems in his country, Lithuania, sharing an extensive border with Belarus and Russian enclave, the Kaliningrad Oblast. Anušauskas stated, quote, "This year, the rotational air defense system will finally become operational, at least partially. Our goal is to have a rotation similar to the air policing mission. This principle would not be a one-off thing for several months, but would cover all of our calendar months and significantly increase our air defense capabilities," unquote. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova's take on all this Western warmongering threats, quote, "All these statements that Macron and other NATO politicians make about the possibility of introducing contingents or some kind of paramilitary units into the territory of Ukraine are related to the partition of what they see as the remnants of Ukraine." Along similar lines, Putin commented this week that if the Polish troops enter Ukraine, they will never leave, never having gotten over Stalin at the end of World War II giving away Galicia, always part of historic Poland, suddenly to Ukraine, the Poles are still wanting what was once theirs back. And Putin will probably let them have it, as he is not interested in conquering and occupying hostile foreign lands, but only protecting the well-being of his fellow ethnic Russians. And that has been his sole interest throughout. Hence, the annexation of Crimea and the Donbas after the U.S. NATO-trained neo-Nazis were killing 14,000 ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine, outlawing the Russian language spoken for centuries by ethnic Russians in the Donbas and Crimea. In 1954, Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev, himself Ukrainian, gave Crimea to Ukraine as a gift, despite it being part of Russia since 1783. Putin has only wanted to be the leader of a unified Russian nation and protector of its legitimate national sovereignty. It's always been the U.S., NATO, and West that has acted with malfeasance toward Russians since the end of World War II. Earlier in the week, Putin, in an interview, warned that the U.S. and NATO deploying a significant military force in Ukraine would be a, quote, red line for Moscow, deeming it implausible. But if the U.S. and West follow through on its bellicose rhetoric, Russia is ready to respond to the West, quote, playing chicken. Putin said, if need be, he is ready to use nuclear weapons in self-defense, adding he considers Russia's, quote, arsenal more advanced than anyone else's. When asked in the interview about possible use of tactical nukes, Putin replied that Russia has never used weapons of mass destruction in Ukraine, but he did add, quote, "Weapons exist to be used. We have our own principles, and they imply that we are ready to use any weapons, including the ones you mentioned, if we are talking about the existence of the Russian state in case of a threat to our sovereignty and independence," unquote. Immediately, White House spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre accused Putin, quote, "Russia's nuclear rhetoric has been reckless and irresponsible throughout the Ukraine conflict." Karine's Moscow counterpart, Dmitry Peskov, replied, quote, "Washington resorts to intentional distortion of the context and an unwillingness to hear President Putin, who simply reaffirmed Russia's longstanding nuclear doctrine. Putin did not voice any threats to use nuclear weapons in this interview. Everyone in the West deliberately omitted President Putin's words that it never even crossed his mind to deploy, for example, tactical nuclear weapons, despite various situations that have shaped up, unquote. All this back and forth by nation-state leaders intentionally misreading and twisting the opponent to dehumanize the targeted enemy is prelude war propaganda preceding every military war ever started. The bottom line here is the long-standing U.S.-NATO obsession to aggressively try to weaken, overthrow Moscow's government, and break up and partition Russia off into pieces, just like it criminally did to Yugoslavia under the Clintons and NATO back in the 1990s, is why the U.S. fought and lost Middle East wars for the greater Zionist Israel project, trying to break up Arab lands surrounding Israel to expand the Rothschild-owned Jewish state. This lawless theme is a U.S. expansionist imperialistic old trick, a ruthless agenda, a self-proclaimed global kingpin in direct obedience to the City of London demands, controlling both the U.S. and Zionist Israel's every move over a century now. The elite's latest agenda is to increase their global power and control by depopulating 95% of today's Earth population through world war, along with other WMDs in its arsenal. With more on the horizon, with more war on the horizon, signs of impending World War III are coming from numerous sources. Not just government leaders. More than 5 months ago, deep state players atop the global financial banking infrastructure, aware that something big is coming because the globalists have been planning it for years, if not centuries in advance. Less than a week after the October 7th Hamas attack, America's largest central bank, the Rothschild affiliate J.P. Morgan Chase's longtime Epstein-linked CEO, Jamie Dimon, stated, quote, "The attacks on Israel may have far-reaching impacts. This may be the most dangerous time the world has seen in decades," unquote. Billionaire investor and hedge fund manager Ray Dalio is quoted making a similar statement in an October 13th Business Today article, quote, "These two wars will cost the allies of these countries a lot. For example, the U.S. is now fighting proxy wars in Europe and the Middle East while preparing for war in East Asia. All these wars spread. As these wars spread, they will cost more. Fortunately, the progression toward a world war between the biggest powers, the U.S. and China, has not yet crossed the irreversible line from being containable, which it is now, to becoming a brutal war between the biggest powers and their allies. If these major powers do have direct fighting with each other, in which one side kills a significant number of people on the other side, we will see the transition from contained pre-hot war conflicts to a brutal World War III," unquote. So, on October 13, 2023, the same day both Jamie Dimon and Dalio made their ominous decrees that something wicked this way comes, a bipartisan congressional committee called the Strategic Posture Commission, SPC, also released its report again on that very same day of October 13th, forecasting the same doom and gloom World War III message. Quote, "The United States must prepare for possible simultaneous wars with Russia and China." SPC called for immediate expansion of conventional forces as well as revamping America's nuclear weapons program. What are the odds? Less than a week and so early into the Israel-Hamas conflict, all three of these globalist insiders on the exact same day predict World War III ahead. It indicates a strong likelihood of advance notice, all having gotten the same memo to begin publicly announcing the World War III horror to come as part of their satanic predictive programming, instructing them to begin prepping us all for the globalist-created doomsday. This is the elite's modus operandi executing their, quote, problem-reaction-solution methodology, placing us in shackles of absolute neo-feudal deep state enslavement. With 52-year-old Nathaniel Rothschild, heir to his father's patriarchal title as the newly, quote, crowned fifth Baron Lord Rothschild, after Daddy Jacob died a couple of weeks ago at age 87, it bears reminder that it was exactly 2 years ago that Nate Rothschild wrote his agitated letter to the UK Parliament demanding decisively prompt and swift action against the Hitleresque Putin in Ukraine. Quote, Russia must be excised from the international banking and economic system. We must bring Russia to its knees through any means possible to send a strong signal to the Chinese and to protect our global system of norms and liberal values. We must be under no illusions. If we allow Vladimir Putin to seize Ukraine, it will send a signal to our enemies, Iran, China, and North Korea especially, that will do nothing when faced with an onslaught of force. In effect, our current path of lack of military action means that our global order is dead on its feet. I urge you to deploy more force against Russia and its proxies. Step up information warfare to correct opinion, especially online, and send weaponry to our friends in Ukraine. Without Ukraine, the global order may not survive. Ouch! Yeah, that's little Nate, the 52-year-old, now the Baron. As the desperation grows per the article I read earlier, expect more recklessness from the globalists and their minions that no doubt will include a number of false flags as their go-to weapon in their problem-reaction-solution dialectic to bring about an absolute technocratic totalitarian tyranny of one-world governance. They know we are on to their crimes against humanity and children that includes their genocide against the human race. So, it's a race against time. They are racing to kill enough of us before they are brought to justice at the gallows. Okay, now I shall read my second article of the week, and it's called Today's Breaking Scandals, From Boeing Whistleblower Silence to Human Data Harvesting Crime. 62-year-old John Burnett, a Boeing employee for 32 years who from 2010 to 2017 was a quality control manager, soon turned whistleblower after he witnessed unsafe standards. Just prior to his death last Saturday, March 9th, Burnett was providing deposition testimony in a high-profile lawsuit against Boeing. With the case's depositions entering their third day, John's life was violently cut short while exposing his former employer's shoddy production quality record. Found dead in his truck outside his hotel, it has all the earmarks of yet another, quote, suicided whistleblower. The press reported that the Charleston County Coroner's Office claimed his cause of death to be self-inflicted gunshot wound. Cui bono? Boeing obviously has the most means and most motive to do him in, since his damaging testimony was a growing liability to the company. Circumstantial evidence suggests he was assassinated as payback for courageously spilling the beans on the giant aviation manufacturer. 2 years after retiring from Boeing's North Charleston, South Carolina plant in April 2019, Barnett told the New York Times, quote, I haven't seen a plane out of the Charleston yet that I'd put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy, unquote. Then in November 2019, he disclosed to the BBC that up to a quarter of the oxygen systems tested at his plant on Boeing's Dreamliner 787 series were faulty should sudden decompression in the cabin require activation. He also cited at least one incident where he knew workers were using parts from scrap bins to fit planes on the production line. The rush to get orders out allegedly had Boeing cutting corners on safety. When two 737 MAX jets crashed in Ethiopia and Indonesia in 2017, Barnett's whistleblowing efforts brought him to the press. A year and a half ago, Boeing was forced to pay out $200 million and its then deposed CEO, Dennis Muilenburg, paid out $1 million out of his pocket in lost lawsuit settlements for intentionally misleading Boeing shareholders. Then on January 5th this year, a midair blowout on an Alaskan Airlines flight due to missing bolts brought out renewed intensive heat on the company for its repeated record showing poor quality safety standards. Subsequent interviews with a dozen current and former industry executives suggest pressure to produce planes fast enough off the production line on top of many inexperienced recent hired inspectors during COVID severely reducing quality control. Coinciding with Burnett's death now on Saturday, March 10th, it was reported that the U.S. Department of Justice is launching a criminal investigation into the January 5th 737 MAX midair panel door blowout. But that was just the beginning of this year's multiple incidents of serious ongoing gaping safety gaffes that include a cracked cockpit window, last month's rush of a 737 MAX delivery to Alaska Airlines found four critical bolts missing on the wing, while in at least two other incidents, various wheels were falling off during takeoffs, and several engine fires and failures. You think that's enough to question the safety standards of Boeing Company? I should say. A mere year after Boeing's last lawsuit settlement, this scandal marked Boeing's second humongous safety crisis within 5 years, sending the company's stocks plummeting. All the while, to stop the bleeding, the current frantic CEO keeps lying his ass off, just like the last one that got canned, when he keeps telling shareholders, media, and the public that his company's safety standards remain high. But when huge amounts of money are involved, loose, deceptive words come mighty cheap, especially when so flagrantly unbacked by reality. With billions of dollars at stake, thousands of jobs on the line, and even more passenger lives at risk, murder of whistleblower Barnett to silence the truth is sadly part and parcel of today's treacherous, lawless world and an increasing common occurrence. In all likelihood, to stop the bleeding, John Barnett was stopped from providing yet more damaging testimony, sending an obvious message to any future would-be whistleblowers to keep their mouths shut or else the same untimely fate could befall them as well. We live in an ever-dangerous world where desperation may drive unstable individuals to commit horrific crimes. Or worse, it could be bigger, more sinister crimes involving the ultra-powerful military-industrial complex operating within the international deep state crime cabal that systematically silences truth-tellers to death for simply trying to wake up the public and authorities to finally begin holding the criminally guilty accountable. With the current, highly corrupt, traitorous Department of Justice, don't count on any justice coming soon. A Thursday, March 14th, Zero Hedge article reports that Boeing deleted video footage of that same Alaskan airline panel door mid-flight mishap in January that in September 2023 had been sloppily, quote, repaired, still missing those critical bolts. On top of losing the evidence, the article adds, quote, the NTSB chair, Jennifer Hammondy, said it's unclear who performed the work to open, reinstall, and close the door plug on the accident aircraft, as Boeing is unable to find the records documenting this work. So, it's becoming increasingly suspicious that Boeing is now guilty of willful destruction of evidence. This surfaces at the same time of the highly probable murder of the Boeing whistleblower John Barnett. Plus, it's been learned that multiple Congress members sold off their large Boeing stock holdings just ahead of Boeing's latest liabilities getting exposed. And now DOJ's criminal investigation of Boeing is launched. Corrupt Congress members have been criminally engaging in insider trading for many decades. Just ask Nancy Pelosi, the billionaire. Not from her Congress salary, that's for sure. This Boeing Corporation, as a long-standing giant within the deep state's all-powerful military-industrial complex, is a piggish criminal enterprise thoroughly caught parasitically feeding at the war profiteering trough now for far too long. The entire airline aviation industry today is a chronic state of crisis, not only with the scandalous Boeing saga, but also over dozens of professional airline pilots all dying suddenly in their 40s and 50s, often from aggressive bouts of turbo cancer caused by industry-wide mandated kill shots. We all know it. Well, to hear the music, time to go. Listen to our sponsors. You.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back with this message.
Industrial Complex Podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B at Jonathan Wright Show.
Find it right here at revolution.radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in Defense Condition 1. as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type, placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome to hour number two of Cabal Empire Exposed with your host, Joaquin Hagopian. I'll jump right back into what I was reading. Four more veteran active pilots expired just in the last several weeks, joining a long list of dozens that airline companies would rather you not know about. Canadian doctor William Makis is compiling an updated list posted on Global Research with the latest entry on March 10, 2024, chronicling the tragic deaths of so many previously healthy pilots being systematically taken out by the known bioweapon poison. The murderous crooks remain unindicted and unprosecuted. And the more we wake up, the more WMDs are being dropped on our heads by our common murderous enemy. It's a It's a them or us race against time. Speaking of a bioweapon poison, the eugenics murderers behind the COVID-19 hoax and bioweapon holocaust could be back with a totalitarian vengeance at any time. Ethylene oxide, the chemical used for sterilizing nasal swabs that test for COVID-19, quote, variants, and a couple of other infectious diseases, is a known cancer-causing carcinogen. Yet, it hasn't stopped the notorious democidal U.S. government health agency, the CDC, from still using these known toxic nasal swabs on international travelers flying into the United States at a number of major airports. A March 12th Associated Press article states, quote, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention program asks arriving international passengers to volunteer to have their noses swabbed and answer questions about their travel. The program operates at six airports, and on Tuesday, the CDC said it was adding two more, Chicago's O'Hare and Miami. That these criminals are still using these tests at all after their nefarious overreach and exposure in 2020, 2021, and 2022 with all their mandated PCR tests, mandated kill shots, and mandated lockdowns that literally killed millions and are still killing victims daily, as a diabolically proven crime of plotted genocide driving the eugenics depopulation agenda, it's totally diabolically egregious that this go on. Again, mass noncompliance is our primary resistance weapon if our species is to survive these wanton murderers, like the entire COVID debacle It was never about health, but always, like everything else, to gain more control in conjunction with depopulation of the planet. The swab test article cites nearly a half million at 475,000 samples gathered by incoming passengers from 135 nations thus far. Human genome specimens, which every time you use a swab up your nose, well, guess what? That's a human genome specimen collected by the government, medical, and or private companies are increasingly coming to the news for, notoriously violating our privacy rights, criminally failing to safeguard data, and even covertly sharing DNA databases. Because current data sharing policies have little to no specific safeguards or provisions in place for familial data sharing privacy without permission, too often they are sold and surreptitiously shared with other companies and or government agencies. As an illustration today, facing more than 30 lawsuits by December 2023, 23andMe sent a letter out to its customers, in effect blaming their victims for the company's own massive data breach, in a spurious attempt to absolve any legal responsibility. That over-the-top insult was soon followed up by a massive class action lawsuit filed on Friday, March 8th in San Francisco against 23andMe. After hackers had accessed near 7 million customers' sensitive genetic DNA and information from April to September of last year, specifically targeting records of Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese heritages. According to the lawsuit, quote, sensitive information of 1 million Ashkenazi Jews and 350,000 customers of Chinese heritage was obtained by hackers and offered for sale on the dark web, raising legitimate fears, quote, for the personal safety and security of customers, unquote, in those groups and creating the risk of, quote, subjecting them to ethnic targeting, discrimination, and harassment, unquote. The U.S. Defense Department allegedly funded 46 biolabs busted in March 2022 by the Russian military in Ukraine for the express purpose of developing biowarfare bioweapons exclusively targeting the Russian genome. According to Russian General Igor Kirillov, head of the Radiation, Chemical, and Biological Protection Troops of the Russian Armed Forces, quote, it can be said with a high degree of probability that one of the objectives of the United States and their allies is the creation of bioagents capable of selectively hitting various ethnic groups of the population, like Russians. Additionally, transhumanist globalist Israelis Yuval Noah Harari, the World Economic Forum's chief advisor, touts how we all can be easily hacked and that human data harvesting is a gold mine today. Implications of how genomic database sharing can be unethically abused on targeted populations for diabolical purposes, especially through AI, is alarmingly open-ended and thus far remains totally unchecked. Governments in the last century murdered more people by genocide than humans' deadliest world wars combined. Culling the human herd through the globalist net zero carbon agenda is intended to morph humanity towards a transhumanist, sterile, silicon-based, AI-driven system. Human genocide is becoming alarmingly clearer with each passing week this year as the globalist plunges headlong to World War III. None of this can be dismissed as mere, quote, conspiracy theory, as it has already been exposed as fact. If you choose to continue watching CNN, relying on mainstream media false propaganda to deliver your perception of the world, you can increase the risk of becoming a genocide victim. While today's current U.S. population listed near 330 million, per the Deep State Military Industrial Complex website, Deagle.com, up to 80% of the population in 2025 may not be in the United States. It forecasts the U.S. population to plummet to just 65 million from 330. That's 80% of the people in America, according to Deagle.com, in 2025, a few months away, will be dead, or maybe if they're lucky, off to another country. More than likely, dead. With all the WMDs the power elites are flagrantly throwing in our face all at once as part of their depopulation agenda, amassing their mega crisis convergence, Deagle's highly disturbing prediction could potentially be more accurate than we would care to admit. Postscript to what I just read. A March 14th Newsweek article entitled "The Death Toll of Whistleblowing Must End Now," written by three whistleblowing activists, respond to John Barnett's death with the following words, quote, "The cause is a system that completely ignores the individual cost of whistleblowing, even as we become more dependent on the public service they perform. Corporations and billionaires are becoming more and more adept at hiding their nefarious doings while government regulations lag. Too often, only the insider can flag a problem that will cause real-world harm, like a plane crash. Yet, we leave these individuals to face down the powerful on their own, navigating a minefield of legal and personal risk, like assassination." Okay, now I move on to other news. Though it's all interrelated, everything major that's happening is very much interrelated, and you can boil it down to depopulation. Almost everything is now intended for that purpose. That happens. Rather than submit to pressure from the U.S. and brokers Qatar and Egypt to agree to a ceasefire prior to March 10th Ramadan, the Islamic holy month of fasting, Bibi the Butcher defiantly kills on, now over 31,000 murdered Palestinians in Gaza. He also went on social media on March 10th in a 13-second video vowing, quote, "On the way to this victory, we already eliminated number 4 in Hamas. 3, 2, and 1 are on the way. They are all dead men. We will reach them all. Ah." Number 4 was assassinated in Lebanon in January. The fate of number 3, Marwan Issa, who played a key role in the October 7th attack, still awaits as Israel targeted an airstrike over the weekend, last weekend, trying to take him out. Bibi knows he has to present cocksure that victory is within grasp, projecting his bloodthirsty false bravado as if victory's already a done deal when his campaign to eradicate all Hamas militants is totally unrealistic, and his IDF forces are totally bogged down in stalemate. War Cabinet member Benny Gantz's threat last month of an IDF ground invasion into Rafah by March 10th, thankfully, has yet to be launched. However, there is activity now in Gaza, in South Gaza near Rafah, right now, stepped up by the Israeli Defense Forces, and the ground invasion is probably a day, 2 week, maybe a week away. On Thursday, March 14th, the Jew among all Jews in America, Senate Leader Chuck Schumer, made a speech on the Senate floor basically calling for a new election in Israel and the end of Bibi the Butcher's brutal reign for his continued massacre of the Palestinian people. This is big news. And here is what he said. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take precedence over the best interests of Israel. Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah, which it already is, along with the United States. The Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past. Unquote. But rather than be in agreement with these truthful words from the highest-ranking American Jew in U.S. politics history for criticizing the butcher, the two leaders of the Republican Party, Senator Mitch McConnell and Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, both condemned Schumer. Here's McConnell's quote.
The Department Party doesn't have an anti-Bibi problem, it has an anti-Israel problem, unquote.
The next thing we'll hear is Schumer's an anti-Semite. After all, any and all criticism of Israel automatically means you're an anti-Semite. Mike Johnson rebuked Schumer's statement with this, quote,
it's just plain wrong for an American leader to play such a divisive role in Israeli politics, while our closest ally in the region is in an existential battle for its very survival. Oh, shut the F up, you mother. What does this tell you? It means that the U.S. Congress and government are owned first by City of London, that in turn own Israel, that in turn own the U.S. government.
Bibi's bloody genocidal agenda and his other butchering cabinet ministers have alienated the entire world now to turn against this current criminal Israeli regime, including against the U.S. for its genocidal approval and aid in weapons and money that permit this daily slaughter as Israel's criminal accomplice. But when Chucky Boy Schumer throws in the towel during his election year, knowing to keep his job as Senate leader, he must turn on Bibi. You know the bloodthirsty butcher and his crew's days are numbered now. Speaking of days numbered, another Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, again, is caving in to Biden and the Democrats' demands for money for Ukraine. Just like his predecessor, the terminated one, this asshole is proving that U.S. Congress is a uniparty system of totally controlled, bribed and blackmailed traitors who answer only to City of London's planetary controllers rather than we, the people of the United States. I can't say I'm surprised because I always knew this would be coming. At the annual GOP retreat in West Virginia, Johnson stated on Thursday, March 14th, quote,
we have to stand together, stick together, get the job done. I'm absolutely convinced if we do that.
Stand together to keep the Ukraine war going is a shame on Johnson and all those that join him in Congress. With a GOP House member resigning, it gave Republicans only two more Democrats in the House. So the ballless wonders caving in to all the pressure. With the next financial shutdown of government only a week away from today, pressure to pass the humongous spending bill package that the Senate already passed mounts each passing day. In the meantime, no movement in the prospect of closing the southern border and beefing up its security with zero money going to the border.
But Israel and Ukraine will get their big cash cow handout reward because the creators of all wars own Washington and virtually everyone in U.S. government. Pressure is increasing for the already passed Senate bill giving $60 billion more to Kiev to be put up for vote in the House. I am so disgusted with this government of traitors, hell-bent on destroying our country and all of its American citizens. U.S. politicians are all in the pocket of their globalist donors who are the genocidal criminals currently murdering the human race. And Washington refuses to do anything to stop this human depopulation slaughter that's already well underway. If the people don't unite and oppose this ongoing genocide, the human species on this planet is finished. Survival of our species right now is up for grabs. Okay, I would like to read a couple of articles here, not written by me. One is by Peter Koenig. And those of you who are aware of global research, you have to be very familiar because he puts up an article every, one or two days? I mean, I do pretty good with two a week, once in a while, three. But never have I been able to have that frequency of two, three, four, five, I don't know. Anyway, Peter Koenig is an extremely prolific writer for global research. And many of his articles are always, almost always, the most read on that site. And this one's called, put out on March 11th. This one's called Engineered Destruction of America and Europe. Quote, Nations of Sheep Ruled by Wolves. Peter Koenig, Global Research, March 11th. Quote, predicted in 1991 by Club of Rome, a nation of sheep will be ruled by wolves. The Club of Rome, created in 1968, issued in 1991 its second, quote, world-reaching report, The First Global Revolution, unquote. Its preamble says, quote, Ah, love, could thou and I with faith conspire to grasp this sorry scheme of things entire? Would not we shatter it to bits and then remold it nearer to our heart's desire? Unquote. Edward Fitzgerald, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam is the title that Edward Fitzgerald gave to his 1859 translation from Persian to English of a selection of quatrains, four-line poem, attributed to Omar Khayyam, dubbed the astronomer poet of Persia. At the end of the foreword, there is another remarkable quote, and here it is. No generation has ever liked its prophets, least of all those who point out the consequences of bad judgment and lack of foresight. The Club of Rome can take pride of the fact that it has been unpopular for the last 20 years. I hope many years to come spell out the unpalatable facts and to unsettle the conscience of the smug and the apathetic. This is a quote from Prince Philip, the consort of Queen Elizabeth, Duke of Edinburgh, message to the delegates at the 20th anniversary conference of the Club of Rome in Paris in 1988. And this is the same dude that wanted to die, which he died about 2 years ago, and wanted to come back as a killer virus. So maybe he's going to be the next one reincarnated. Oh, nausea. Quote, the cult of sovereignty has become mankind's major religion. Its God demands human sacrifice. And that's Arnold Toynbee, the British historian and philosopher. This is the tenor of the book throughout its 160 pages. It is spiked with arrogance and superiority. Together with its precursor, Limits to Growth, it promotes eugenics as it, and is, as of this day and beyond, if we let it, the blueprint for the World Economic Forum's Great Reset and the United Nations Agenda 2030. Together, these two reports promote, or rather dictate, destruction for building back better. Remember the never-explained slogan of the neocons? And eugenics. These are the top priorities under which humanity is living and suffering today. This is why wars are supported over peace, why people have to be tricked into believing in unaccountable and unpredictable pandemics, all on the horizon, like disease X. And of course, we do not worry. Vaccines are on the drawing board, the mRNA kinds that modify your genes, so you become a better human being, code for so you perish faster, unquote. Remember the slogan on top, a nation of sheep will be ruled by wolves. For God's sake, let's stop being sheep. What we are living these days, weeks, months, and over at least the past 4 years now, in ever-accelerating pace, is precisely the agenda, the dictate of the Club of Rome, destruction in the name of the game. Starting with the West, that includes destruction of our economy, industry, infrastructure, agriculture, the very food we need to survive, services, healthcare, legal systems, ethics, faith, hope, and finally, humanity itself. We are now some 8 billion people. They want us down to below 1 billion. When we see doom, the cabal's boots can complete its stampede. Destruction initiated by Francis Macron? A few days ago, France's President Macron said openly and without remorse, quote, there are no limits to support for Ukraine, he added. France should abide by no limits or Russian red line when it comes to backing Kiev, unquote. This is strong stuff, a provocation for Russia without precedence. Macron already earlier said that sending NATO troops, French troops, to Ukraine was indeed an option. This is putting the finger on the trigger for a nuclear blast. If it is not clear yet to the arrogant Washington puppets, Russia's red line does not disappear because Mr. Macron says so. Russia's nuclear arsenal is way superior to that of the U.S., which is stationed as NATO throughout Europe and Asia, pointing its nuclear warhead missiles towards Moscow. If destruction must be, Mr. Macron, it will indeed be Europe again, the third time in just over 100 years, Europe and probably way beyond. This time, nobody can even imagine the extent of destruction and the cost in human lives. And it may be too late for the Western elites, masterminds of disaster, to run to their bunkers. Former Russian president and current deputy head of the National Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, posted on X, former Twitter, that this means, quote, Russia has no more red lines left for France. He added, everything is allowed against enemies. Here the enemy being France and all those dragged along by French arrogance. French European parliamentarian Florian Philippot, leader of the French Patriots Party, urged the French to impeach Macron before they are sent to die in Ukraine. Quote, it is up to every Frenchman to resist, for every mother to refuse to let her son die for Kiev, NATO, and BlackRock, Philippot said on X. It's up to us to fight to leave the EU and NATO and throw Macron out, he said. Never before has a European so-called leader made such stern and provocative pronouncements, not even Macron, Who gave him orders to do so now? Who gave him orders? Will he send officially French NATO troops to Ukraine, thereby crossing Mr. Putin's red line and provoking whatever Russia finds is necessary to protect her integrity, her land, and her people? It could be a nuclear, all-destructive conflict. That is what many analysts predict and fear. Is that what the power behind France and behind the dark cabal wants? A total destruction, which would also serve the depopulation agenda? Maybe. Perhaps 2024 is the time. The leader of the French Republican Party, the Gaullist, Eric Ciotti, is more prudent, saying supporting Ukraine by sending troops would be, quote, irresponsible and dangerous. Let us trust that humanity will find sanity and rather depose Macron than follow his unthinkably dangerous advice in words and, God knows, deeds. Moscow is alert. On a lower key, Moscow warns that NATO is becoming increasingly aggressive. The plan is an engineered destruction of humanity, carrying out the Club of Rome's mandate. Mind you, the elite is not planning to self-destruct, of course not. Before total annihilation, they hope to seek rescue in their bunkers, wherever they are, maybe in a remote island of Hawaii, in a New Zealand, or simply in South Dakota. President Joe Biden's State of the Union address of March 9, 2024 is another disastrous message for total destruction, annihilation of civilization if he has his way. But he will not. Quote, a normal State of the Union address is about the United States. It is about the state of affairs of the nation, of the economy, of jobs, of growth and growth potential, about forecasts, development perspectives. It is a message of foresight, supposed to give people hope, to let them know their government plans to improve shortcomings. Nothing of that happened. The first 20 minutes of the speech was dedicated to Ukraine alone, smashing President Putin in Russia and, quote, we shall never abandon you, Ukraine. We will always stand behind you, unquote. Promising sending another $90 billion to the Ukrainian oligarchs. Taxpayers' money for zilch. Biden knows it. The U.S. Congress knows it. Everybody knows it. This war is never winnable against Russia. And why should it be? Others, other than having prepared and started it, compliments of Madame Victoria Nuland, fuck Europe, now gone, thanks God, a more than $10 billion preparation project. What remaining interest does the U.S. have in fighting a proxy war some 10,000 kilometers away across the Atlantic in Europe? Certainly not national security. Boosting the profit margins of the military-industrial complex for sure is a good reason, and achieving, quote, regime change in Russia. Madam Nuland's admitting words in an interview to CNN's Christiane Amanpour just days before her forced resignation. Yes, it has always been about bringing Russia to the knees of the Washington wannabe emperor with a Russian puppet leader. They thought they had achieved their target in 1991 with then-President Yeltsin, who was smarter than given credit for when he introduced Mr. Vladimir Putin, appointing him in August 1999 as prime minister. It was clear that President Yeltsin was preparing Mr. Putin for the Kremlin, so much for defeating the West's sneaky ways to subdue Russia. Mr. Biden's speech was also a rant against Republicans. Right at the beginning, he compared former President Trump, his only opponent in the still planned November 2024 election, to Hitler. That is what he called Donald Trump. This man, Biden, has zero decency. His face expressed anger throughout. He yelled and ranted. And guess what? He got standing ovations. That speaks volumes for the State of the Union of the United States. Tucker Carlson, responding to Joe Biden's State of the Union address, said it was the United States' worst ever State of the Union address. In addition to describing the crime the U.S., the West was financing in Ukraine, Tucker Carlson pointed to other destructive measures Biden promoted, like transhumanism and free abortion. In other words, the Soros-funded woke agenda, which doesn't even hide its population reduction objective. Illegal immigrants. Tucker Carlson also talked about Biden's insane open borders policy, bringing illegals into the U.S., even by plane loads, giving them shelter, food, debit cards, never to be paid back. Mostly young men that could and are expected to serve in the U.S. Army. Why would Biden do that? These immigrants have zero allegiance to the United States and should serve in the U.S. Army, perhaps against the American people, during a provoked uprising. Illegal immigrants are directly flown into the United States, the Biden administration openly admits. So far, the official figure points to 320,000. The official reason is indeed to make up for the military recruitment shortcomings. The real reason is certainly somewhere else. Immigrants, especially when they come in masses, are always a disruption in the society they enter. It is the same in Europe. Europe's policy is not much different from that of the U.S. It is very much coordinated. Sure, the globalists are in charge of the migration crisis on both continents. Of course, the same people. They're in charge of the Ukraine war, the Middle East war, the war that's going to go on with Taiwan. They're in charge of all of it, including all the governments. The real reason is certainly somewhere else. In an interview with Tucker Carlson, Colonel McGregor, a West Pointer, I might add, and about the only West Pointer that I can be proud to have gone to school with, warns about the plan to recruit illegals into the U.S. military. Tucker said that Rome fell because foreigners who were not loyal to Rome populated its military and they turned on the people of Rome. For the same reason, retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor warned Americans against allowing illegal aliens to serve in the armed forces. Indeed, disrupting society. But why? Creating internal conflict, internal strife, maybe civil war. It is a means of destruction, and the victims are the immigrants who are just dreaming of a better world. Instead, they are being used for the Club of Rome's precept, old destruction, to eventually rebuilding according to the elite's desire. These are just a few examples of the planned and engineered destruction, exactly as foreseen under the Club of Rome edicts. People, wake up. What happens in the U.S. is already happening in a different, perhaps less visible version in Europe. Stop being nations of sheep being ruled by wolves. Hell of an article, Peter Koenig, Global Research, March 11th. Okay, and the second article I'm going to read here is called The State of Our Nation No One's Talking About. Tyranny is Rising as Freedom Falls. And this was written by constitutional attorney John Whitehead. And I think it's on Global Research. It's all over the place, actually. John, everything he writes goes everywhere, unlike my writing. But anyway, a little jealousy. March 12th, quote, this is a quote from Hannah Arendt, who wrote The Origins of Totalitarianism. Quote, never has our future been more unpredictable. Never have we depended so much on political forces that cannot be trusted to follow the rules of common sense and self-interest. Forces that look like sheer insanity if judged by the standards of other centuries. Wow. Wise quote. Because it's exactly right about what's going on today. Okay, this is John Whitehead's words. Day by day, tyranny is rising as freedom falls. The U.S. military is being used to patrol subway stations and police the U.S.-Mexico border, supposedly in the name of national security. The financial sector is being used to carry out broad surveillance of Americans' private financial data, while the entertainment sector is being tapped to inform on video game enthusiasts with a penchant for violent, potentially extremist content, all in an alleged effort to uncover individuals subscribing to anti-government sentiments. Public and private venues are being equipped with sophisticated surveillance technologies, including biometric and facial recognition software, to track Americans wherever they go and whatever they do. Space satellites with powerful overhead surveillance cameras will render privacy null and void. This is the state of our nation that no one is talking about. Not the politicians, not the courts, and not Congress. The government's power grabs are growing bolder, while the rights of the citizenry continue to be trampled underfoot. Hitler is hiding in the shadows, while the citizenry, the only ones powerful enough to stem the authoritarian tide that threatens to lay siege to our constitutional republic, remain easily distracted and conveniently diverted by political theatrics and news cycles that change every few days. This sorry truth has persisted no matter which party has controlled Congress or the White House. These are dangerous times. Yet, while the presidential candidates talk at length about the dangers posed by the opposition party, the U.S. government still poses the gravest threat to our freedoms and way of life. Police shootings of unarmed individuals, invasive surveillance, roadside blood draws, roadside strip searches, SWAT team raids gone awry, the military-industrial complex's costly wars, pork barrel spending, pre-crime laws, civil asset forfeiture, fusion centers, militarization, armed drones, smart policing carried out by AI robots, courts that march in lockstep with the police state, schools that function as indoctrination centers, bureaucrats that keep the deep state in power. These are just a few of the ways in which the police state continues to flex its muscles in a show of force intended to intimidate anyone still clinging to the antiquated notion that the government answers to we the people. Consider for yourself the state of our nation. Americans have little protection against police abuse. The police and other government agents have been generally empowered to probe, poke, pinch, taser, search, seize, strip, and generally manhandle anyone they see fit in almost any circumstance, all with the general blessing of the courts. It is no longer unusual to hear about incidents in which police shoot unarmed individuals first and ask questions later. What is increasingly common, however, is the news that the officers involved in these incidents get off with little more than a slap on the hands. Americans are little more than pocketbooks to fund the police state. If there is any absolute maxim by which the federal government seems to operate, it is that the American taxpayer always gets ripped off. This is true whether you're talking about taxpayers being forced to fund high-priced weaponry that will be used against us, endless wars that do little for our safety or our freedoms, or bloated government agencies with their secret budgets, covert agendas, and clandestine activities. Americans are no longer innocent until proven guilty. We once operated under the assumption that you were innocent until proven guilty, due in large part to rapid advances in technology and a heightened surveillance culture, the burden of proof has been shifted so that the right to be considered innocent until proven guilty has been usurped by a new norm in which all citizens are suspects. Indeed, the government, in cahoots with the corporate state, has erected the ultimate suspect society. In such an environment, we are all potentially guilty of some wrongdoing or another. Americans no longer have a right to self-defense. While the courts continue to disagree over the exact nature of the rights protected by the Second Amendment, the government itself has made its position extremely clear. When it comes to gun rights in particular, and the rights of the citizenry overall, the U.S. government has adopted a, quote, do what I say, not what I do mindset. Nowhere is this double standard more evident than in the government's attempts to arm itself to the teeth, all the while viewing as suspect anyone who dares to legally own a gun, let alone use one in self-defense. Indeed, while it still technically remains illegal to own a firearm in America, possessing one can now get you pulled over, searched, arrested, subjected to all manner of surveillance, treated as a suspect without ever having committed a crime, shot at and killed. Americans no longer have a right to private property. If government agents can invade your home, break down your doors, kill your dog, damage your furnishings, and terrorize your family, your property is no longer private and secure. It belongs to the government. Likewise, if government officials can fine and arrest you for growing vegetables in your front yard, praying with friends in your living room, installing solar panels on your roof, and raising chickens in your backyard, you're no longer the owner of your own property. Americans no longer have a say about what their children are exposed to in school. Incredibly, the government continues to insist that parents essentially forfeit their rights when they send their children to a public school. This growing tension over whether young people, especially those in the public schools, are essentially wards of the state to do with as government officials deem appropriate in defiance of the children's constitutional rights and those of their parents is at the heart of almost every debate over educational programming, school discipline, and the extent to which parents have any say over the children's well-being in and out of school. Americans are powerless in the face of militarized police forces. With local police agencies acquiring military-grade weaponry, training, and equipment better suited for the battlefield, Americans are finding their once peaceful communities transformed into military outposts patrolled by a standing military army. Americans no longer have a right to bodily integrity. The debate over bodily integrity covers broad territory, ranging from abortion and euthanasia to forced blood draws, biometric surveillance, and basic health care, forced vaccinations, forced cavity searches, forced colonoscopies, forced blood draws, forced breath alcohol tests, forced DNA extractions, forced eye scans, forced inclusion in biometric databases. These are just a few in which Americans continue to be reminded that we have control over what happens to our bodies during an encounter with government officials. Americans no longer have a right to the expectation of privacy. Despite the staggering number of revelations about government spying on Americans' phone calls, Facebook posts, Twitter tweets, Google searches, emails, bookstore and grocery purchases, bank statements, commuter toll records, etc., Congress, the President, and the courts have done little to nothing to counteract these abuses. Instead, they seem determined to accustom us to life in this electronic concentration camp. Americans no longer have a representative government. We have moved beyond the era of representative government and entered the age of authoritarianism, where all citizens are suspects, security trumps freedom, and so-called elected officials represent the interests of the corporate power elite. This topsy-turvy travesty of law and government has become America's new normal. Americans can no longer rely on the courts to mete out justice. The U.S. Supreme Court was intended to be an institution established to intervene and protect the people against the government and its agents when they overstep their bounds. Yet, through their deference to police power, preference for security over freedom, an evisceration of our basic human rights for the sake of order and expediency, the justices of the Supreme Court have become the architects of the American police state in which we now live, while the lower courts have appointed themselves courts of order concerned primarily with the advancing the government's agenda, no matter how unjust or illegal. I haven't even touched on the corporate state, the military-industrial complex, SWAT team raids, invasive surveillance technology, zero tolerance policies in the schools, over criminalization or privatized prisons, to name just a few. But what I have touched on should be enough to show that the landscape of our freedoms has already changed dramatically from what it once was, and will no doubt continue to deteriorate unless Americans find a way to wrest back control of their government and reclaim their freedoms. This steady slide toward tyranny, meted out by militarized local and federal police and legalistic bureaucrats, has been carried forward by each successive president over the past 75 plus years, regardless of their political affiliation. The more things change, they stay the same. We are walking a dangerous path right now. Having allowed the government to expand and exceed our reach, we find ourselves on the losing end of a tug of war over control of our country and our lives. And for as long as we let them, government officials will continue to trample on our rights, always justifying their actions as being for the good of the people. Yet the government can only go as far as we the people allow. Therein lies the problem. The pickle we find ourselves in speaks volumes about the nature of the government beast we have been saddled with and how it views the rights and sovereignty of, quote, we the people. Now, you don't hear a lot about sovereignty anymore. Sovereignty is a dusty, antiquated term that harkens back to an age when kings and emperors ruled with absolute power over a populace that had no rights. Americans turned the idea of sovereignty on its head when they declared their independence from Great Britain and rejected the absolute authority of King George III. In doing so, Americans claimed for themselves the right to self-government and established themselves as the ultimate authority and power. In other words, in America, we the people, sovereign citizens, call the shot. So when the government acts, it is supposed to do so at our bidding and on our behalf, because we are the rulers. That's not exactly how it turned out, though, is it? In the 200-plus years since we boldly embarked on this experiment in self-government, we have been steadily losing ground to the government's brazen power grabs foisted upon us in the so-called name of national security. We have relinquished control over the most intimate aspects of our lives to government officials who, while they may occupy seats of authority, are neither wiser, smarter, more in tune with our needs, more knowledgeable about our problems, nor more aware of what is really in our best interest. The government has knocked us off our rightful throne. It has usurped our rightful authority. It has staged the ultimate coup. Its agents no longer even pretend that they answer to we the people. Worst of all, we the people have become desensitized to this constant undermining of our freedoms. How do we reconcile the founders' vision of the government as an entity whose only purpose is to serve the people with the police state's insistence that the government is the supreme authority, that its power trumps that of the people themselves, and that it may exercise that power in any way it sees fit? That includes government agents crashing through doors, mass arrests, ethnic cleansing, racial profiling, indefinite detentions without due justice, and internment camps. They cannot be reconciled. They are polar opposites to what our founding fathers gave us. We are fast approaching a moment of reckoning where we will be forced to choose between the vision of what America was intended to be, a model for self-governance, where power is vested in the people, and the reality of what it has become, a police state where power is vested in the government. We are repeating the mistakes of history, namely allowing a totalitarian state to reign over us. Former concentration camp inmate Hannah Arendt warned against this when she wrote, quote, no matter what the specifically national tradition or the particular spiritual source of its ideology. Totalitarian government always transformed classes into masses, supplanted the party system, not by one-party dictatorships, but by mass movement, shifted the center of power from the army to the police, and established a foreign policy openly directed toward world domination, unquote. So where does that leave us? Aldous Huxley predicted that eventually the government would find a way of, quote, making people love their servitude and producing dictatorship without tears, so to speak, producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies so that people will in fact have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel by propaganda or brainwashing enhanced by pharmaceutical methods. And this seems to be the final solution, unquote. So, I think we have a wake-up call, fellow Americans. We're either going down with this ruthless, tyrannical government that only obeys the demands and dictates of the ruling elite class that are centered in City of London, central banking, Rothschild, Rockefellers, the royal families. They are the ones calling all the shots to give to all the puppet leaders that we think we vote for. No, those are rigged elections, and they've been rigged for quite some time. We must fight back if the human race is going to survive. That is what it's coming down to. It's genocide against the entire human race. And unless we face this danger being thrust upon us in like no time, we're going down unless we fight back. Take care of each other. And don't let the bastards get you down.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions to the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Maggie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.